Welcome to the We Talk Careers podcast, brought to you by Women in ETFs. This is Christine Delano, and I'm thrilled you've joined me. If you're pursuing excellence in your own career or intrigued by the hustle required for a career on Wall Street, this podcast is for you. We've made all this advice accessible. Grab your own Thrive Guide with a workbook on leadership skills at christinedelano.com. So put aside that massive to-do list and let's get inspired. Today, we continue our season of Wall Street careers. We're discussing compliance in the world of exchange-traded funds, a critical function responsible for adherence to legal and regulatory requirements. Compliance professionals play a vital role in maintaining the integrity and transparency of the ETF industry. Now, that may sound a bit dry, but I assure you, throughout my career, compliance departments have been filled with some of the most dynamic and interesting professionals at the firm. What might we learn today about a career in compliance? We have Amy Shelton and Melanie Zimdars with us for this episode. Welcome, both of you, to the We Talk Careers podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. So, Amy, I'm thrilled to have you join us today. We haven't met before, but I am just excited to learn more about you through this conversation. Will you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yes, happy to. Thank you so much. Again, my name is Amy Shelton, and I'm Senior Vice President and Chief Compliance Officer at American Century Investments. As CCO at American Century, I have compliance oversight for our funds, our advisor, our transfer agent, our broker-dealer, and our global operations. So a lot of different areas to cover, but I have a great team, and we'll talk more about that later, but I'm just really excited to be here and share my views on the role of the Chief Compliance Officer.
Wonderful, Amy. And what drives you? What passions do you have that you can share with our listeners?
Well, one of the things that my husband and I always try to do is we have great friends and family, and we entertain a lot. And several years ago, we started not knowing how to do this at all, but we have a paella party every year for about 30 or 40 people. I have this huge paella pan. And the first year we actually made the paella, I had no idea what I was doing. So someone just told me, feed your guests late and provide them with lots of wine and drinks ahead, and they'll be hungry. So even if it's horrible, it'll still be fine. So at any rate, I love to cook, and over the years, I've gotten better.
I imagine that there was no hesitation with people jumping into the paella. That's fantastic. That sounds so good. So good. Melanie, I'm also so thankful for you to join us for this episode. Will you tell us something about yourself?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Christine, for having me here today. So I'm Melanie Zimdars. I am Chief Compliance Officer at Invesco Capital Management. That is the registrant within Invesco, the broader Invesco enterprise, sponsor and registrant and investment advisor to our ETFs, as well as the sponsor to the Qs. So I'm CCO for the Qs, our Invesco ETFs. We also have DB commodity pools and currency shares. And I lead the team on all of our compliance programs for all those entities and products. And I have a great team that's been with me now since I joined the organization. My anniversary is next week, where I'll have been there for 6 years.
Fantastic. And what about you? What drives you? What passions are something that just gets you up every morning?
Well, as you may or may not know, I am passionate about ETFs. But when I'm not talking ETFs, I love spending time with my family. But one of the things that's been a huge part of my life prior to being married and now having a 9-year-old son and a husband is I love spending time outdoors. I love hiking. I love snowshoeing in the winter. So that's something I'm passionate about. I find it to be very therapeutic, whether it's like a 10-minute walk or a 4-hour hike.
I'm with you. I love that. I live in Maine, and right now it's a beautiful time to be hiking out with these beautiful leaves and all of that. But last night we were going through, we have a ski condo, and we were, you know, figuring out all of the dates and when everyone's coming and all of that. And snowshoeing is something that I don't do every year, but when I do, I just think, why am I not doing more of this? So, and I feel like downhill skiing will probably have an end date for me at some point. And I feel like snowshoeing and cross-country skiing will be something that I'll be able to continue. So I share those passions with you for sure.
It's like working out in a postcard, Christine.
That's right. That's right. Although you have to get lots of pictures in order for that one to actually look like the postcard. But that's all right. That's all right.
Yeah.
So, Amy, take us through, you know, what does a typical day in the life look like for a chief compliance officer? Like, what are you doing?
Well, I think one of the things I like most about the job or the role of a chief compliance officer is that no one day is the same. I never know what I'm going to walk into, what issue I'm going to be researching. So typically I start my day by, I check my email and then I check the news and then I watch CNBC and see what's going on. And by the time I get to the office, I've kind of got that under my belt. And then I look to see what's going on with the funds. And then I work with my team, and usually I have a lot of meetings.
A lot of meetings, yes. And no one's bringing paella to your meetings, which is just unfortunate.
They are not.
What about you, Melanie? What does a rhythm look like in your life?
Well, you know, somewhat similar and echoing what Amy just mentioned, I feel like no one day is the same. And one of the things that really, really drove me or had me gravitate towards compliance is we're involved in, it seems like, everything. Whether it's every committee, new product launches, and new business activities to get into. So we're involved in everything. So as a result, I think that just causes, you know, my schedule to be very, very diverse from day to day. So my typical day, if I were to try to articulate what a typical day is for me, I would say many meetings, sometimes double and triple booked. And when I'm not in meetings, whether it be with, you know, other senior legal and compliance colleagues and counterparts or my own team, you know, we are constantly working closely with our business partners and our investment teams. We have a lot of governance structures within our group, so those teams. And, you know, I do try to find time. It's not always at the end of the day. It's not always at the beginning of the day, where I really try to look at not just all the day-to-day more operational deliverables I need to come to the table with, or, you know, putting fires out. But I really try to look at some of our broader initiatives and more of our strategic things that we set out at the beginning of the year and just try to level set to say, okay, you know, where are we at? It's November 7th. Where are we at? We put these in place in January. And so what I want to do is, I don't want to lose sight of some of those things. So I really try to build that into my typical kind of chaos of a day.
That makes a lot of sense. I am just hearkening back to when I first sort of entered the world of finance. So I was an engineer by education. I just finished my master's. I was working for a consulting firm where we were doing more HCI, human computer interaction and design work. And it was such an exciting time where things were like going online, and we were just leveraging the communication medium of the internet like never before. Things had been disks and things had been, you know, paper forms and things like that. And so I was brought on to a large broker dealer to really help with that. But I had gotten all these warnings like, Christine, you're not going to be able to get anything done unless you get compliance on board with what you're doing. And it made it sound like there's going to be these ogres that would come into my meeting and try to take it over and tell me no, no, no all the time. And I was really just sort of prepared with, like, I kind of went into the defense with like trying to like justify what we were trying to do. And those meetings went so differently. Instead, it was like I had partners that were like, we want you to be successful. We want this for our financial advisors. We want this for our clients. So therefore, we're going to sit with you and we're going to help you understand how you can do this and like what language and how you can be precise in what you're saying and still compelling for the users. And it sort of blew my mind with what I thought it was going to be versus what it actually was. So tell me, how do you empower your teams to do this? Melanie, maybe I'll start with you. Like, what does it look like in terms of you working with your teams as they work with their teams?
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent question, Christine. What I'll say is I have a very unique team, and it's really beneficial because I have individuals on my team that have been with the organization for a number of years, some of them almost 20 years. And so they have really fostered relationships with other key business leaders within our organization, whether it's trading, whether it's investments, capital markets. And so it's extremely helpful to have those relationships when we're really trying to execute on whether it's a new product line that we're trying to bring to market, or, you know, just other initiatives that we're trying to get across the finish line. I think having those relationships has been instrumental in us getting our work done. So I feel as though it's a real unique team to have because we have that.
Wonderful. And Amy, what about you? Take us through how you are fostering your teams and how you see your teams as a vital part of being successful.
Yeah, I agree with what Melanie was saying. I mean, relationships are key. Our jobs are, we cover so much area, our remit is wide. And so we really have to know and understand what are the goals and objectives of our business partners so that we can help them achieve those goals in a compliant way. So we come in and we understand the rules, the regulations, and we work with our business partners, and they may want to go a specific direction, but we may have to pivot and say, you know, we can't do it that way, but we can do it this way. So in addition to having those strong relationships where they trust us, we have to be really good problem solvers and be creative in what solution can we come up with if the one you're suggesting doesn't work. So my team, they've got those relationships, they've got the empowerment to work with their teams to come up with solutions. And I think that's what makes it work. Really, it's knowing that we're not going to just say no and move on. We're going to offer up solutions and how we can do it to get them to where they want to be.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about how you got where you're at. So they're not handing out CCO titles to anyone, right? You know, this is a pretty important role that you guys both have at your firms. So maybe starting with you, Amy, did you pursue this? You know, was this your idea? You know, I have a junior in high school right now that's starting to look at colleges, you know, we're going on trips and all of that. So he isn't saying to me, I want to be a chief compliance officer, but maybe he should. but so tell me how it was for you. Like, did you know early, you know, at what point did you start pursuing where you're at?
Well, you know, I don't think anybody ever just wakes up one day and says, I want to be a chief compliance officer. It's sort of an evolution, if you will. I have always been in this sort of field of work in terms of the financial industry and typically always a compliance role within the legal department. So really, I mean, the way I got here is a key moment was when the Rule 38A1 came out in 2004. And I was hired to help build that compliance program. And I got to know people, process, how things work, where the risks are. And I built a lot of strong relationships starting there. And then I just continued to raise my hand to take new projects on. And then after a while, I didn't have to raise my hand. People knew my work ethic. They knew that I was trustworthy, and they started asking me to take on new roles, and different opportunities came up for me. And so I took over the broker-dealer CCO role and carried that on for several years. And then in 2013, when my boss, the chief compliance officer at the time, decided she wanted to retire, she asked me if I would consider this position. And of course, I was thrilled, I was scared, I was all of those things. But So it really is a progression of different things that you have under your belt, different experiences, and learning. I mean, this job is not an easy job. It covers so many areas. And so it's been a great ride. It's been a great experience and really learning something every day. And again, that's doing something different every day and learning something every day is just what keeps me going.
For so many people in leadership roles, I think they can probably look back to that moment that transitions from hand raising to being invited, right? To the idea that people are seeking you out. And so just a moment of like encouraging the listeners out there that are still in their hand raising time to know that that transition is an exciting one. And as you're raising your hand, you're building relationships, you're finding success, you're willing to do the work that maybe others aren't, and that there is a payoff for all of that. And so I absolutely love that reminder, Amy, for folks that are just like, I'm still just raising my hand, and just to be invited into and have folks seeking you out, which is just fantastic. What about you, Melanie? How did you get where you are, and what did that path look like for you?
Yeah, so for me, Christine, you know, I started out working in a very financial reporting role many, many years ago at a boutique asset manager. And I had an excellent mentor, and I just saw this person who was so dynamic and so professional, but yet so patient and giving of her time to me. It was remarkable because I was still quite green and new in my role. And then shortly thereafter, she resigned. And so I did not become a CCO at that time, but I took on a lot more responsibility and became the treasurer of our open-end funds and was really expanding my role. And that was just 1 year after the 30-day one and 20647 rule, as Amy was just mentioning. So the timing of it was also impeccable. But I then, you know, kept just building my skills. And similarly, I was hungry to, you know, dive in and learn something and do a deep dive into a given topic. And then I would get through that. And then I wanted more. And so I just was really trying to, hone in on my technical skills and really, really understanding the regulatory framework and environment. And that kept changing, of course. And then I became a CCO for a different shop. I had left for a new opportunity in 2009. And I was actually the CCO for an array of different of our proprietary trusts for that firm. And so I was exposed to all these different product types. And it was just a whirlwind trying to balance it all. And I had at one point, you know, 39 sub-advisors I was overseeing. I was working on interval funds and closed end. I was working on all these different product types. And I really had to understand who were the partners, what other teams I could leverage, including my own, and really know how to balance, you know, what to focus on. Because as Amy, I think, was alluding to, I mean, we're pulled in so many directions and we're involved in so many decisions. And so you really need to be able to kind of hone in and balance where you need to focus your resources.
Something consistent we've heard across folks talking about their careers is the fact that they need to keep on top of so much of what's going on in the industry, that they do spend time reading and pursuing information. And Melanie, you mentioned it with like deep diving into it. And they all made really strong cases for why that's really important. It makes a lot of sense to me. But I don't think any more than what you guys do. I mean, I just feel like you guys probably are at the peak of needing to know, because there's so many different projects, so many different things that people need somebody looking it over and saying, is this corporately safe for us to be able to release, right? So there's so much that you need to know. So I've been thinking about, what are some of the other sort of strengths or qualities do you look for in the people that you're hiring, or that you may look to eventually to have somebody replace you? Like, what are some of the things where you're like, yes, that person is probably ideally suited or could become if they developed this? So Melanie, maybe I'll throw that to you first.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're asking the question that we go through this exercise at least once a year at my firm, and it's, you know, thinking about the succession planning. And so when I think about, you know, somebody who could be set up for success in this role, it's not just having those relationships, you know, internally and fostering those relationships and understanding the business and in the case of my world, I guess the ETF ecosystem, but really being an effective communicator with your internal business partners and those that need to hear your voice, as well as externally and all the different bodies that be that that we need to effectively communicate with. So those to me stand out as probably the key pieces for that person to be set up for success in this type of a role.
Thank you, Melanie. What about you, Amy? What are you looking for? You had mentioned that you've been going through hiring and things like that. So, you know, what are some of these qualities that you would like to see people developing in themselves in order to be part of your organization?
Yeah, well, I will just reiterate again. I mean, we've talked about problem solving. It's so important to be able to synthesize information really quickly and make decisions. And sometimes you have to make decisions with not a lot of information. So being a good problem solver is really important. I agree with Melanie. It's relationships are key. We've talked about that and building those relationships both internally and externally and having a network of people to go to, whether they're groups that maybe CCOs belong to. Those are important, that networking aspect and communication skills, because many times we are dealing with a very complex or technical situation. And 9 times out of 10, it's very confusing. You have to really dig into the facts, but you have to be able to explain it to maybe your board or internally to senior management, someone who, or a group of people who might not be in the weeds every single day. And so being able to communicate a really complex technical subject in a way that's very understandable and easy to be heard is really important. So I think all of those skills are really important. And I guess the other thing I would add is just being able to juggle many things. I have a graphic up in my office with a woman who's got several plates and balls up in the air. And I think that's the life of a CCO. We handle so many different things. And as Melanie said, we're involved in so many decisions, and you really have to know how one decision might impact another decision within the organization. So all of those skills, problem solving, good communication skills, partnerships, relationships are just so important.
You guys both mentioned 38A1, and there's been so many changes and rules that have come about within the ETF industry that have just changed the face of it. And so what do you see in terms of emerging rules, technologies, trends that are going to impact your role in the future? Melanie?
Well, again, I think it's ever changing and evolving. I would say, you know, what we keep thinking about and talking about is AI, and digital assets and that landscape, ESG. So it's really sometimes mind-blowing, I think, how many different things that I feel like keep hitting our platform and that we're trying to dissect and get in front of as quickly as possible.
Right. And you've got financial advisors fielding conversations with clients and then coming to you for products saying, you know, is it going to do this and where is this going? So I can imagine that those are just a constant conversation. What about you, Amy? What do you see in terms of emerging trends or technologies that we should be on the lookout for?
Yeah, well, I really do think artificial intelligence is going to be what changes the landscape for not only compliance in our industry, but just across all industries. And you may have seen last week, there was an executive order issued on how the government can take a sort of unified approach to looking at AI and its development and how we do it in a safe and manageable way. And I think that's one of the things as a compliance professional, I look at AI and I think it has amazing, extraordinary capabilities, but I also worry, what are the unintended consequences of using artificial intelligence? So it was really interesting to see this executive order come out. It covers so much territory. It's not specific to the financial services industry, but I think over the next probably 3 to 18 months, we will see a lot of framework being built by our government, just in terms of legislation to make sure that artificial intelligence, the data you put in it, is kept private. What are the risks? What are the rules? And I think that will be fascinating to watch, because we're all trying to be more productive. We're all trying to do more with less. We're all trying to allow our employees to focus in on the really interesting aspects of their jobs and get rid of those things that maybe are repetitive or not as interesting. So I believe technology, artificial intelligence, all of these things we're seeing will change the face of our industry and make it better. And hopefully we can do it in a responsible way. So I'll be doing my homework to monitor where these new rules come out and how they're applied. But it's a very exciting time.
Well, it gives me some comfort that both of you are going to be on top of it. I feel like, Amy, that I am often the woman in your poster with like juggling many things. And one of those is being a fiction writer. So I write suspense novels. And there has just been a lot of chatter with other authors that have their work published that's being used by AI to like take it apart and you know, without giving their permission to use, you know, sort of their art form to like dissect and to, you know, and to be part of this other intelligence. And so I feel like there's just so many conversations around like the good it can do. And I use it to like research, you know, someone's coming to me with an interesting job title and I'm like putting it in and, you know, finding out definitions of things. And it's fantastic. I think there's really interesting things that where it can synthesize information for you. But there's also this idea of sort of the freedom of our own intelligence and our own creativity and so many other things too. So I think it's certainly a topic that we've heard before and I think we'll be continuing to have a conversation around. So thank you both for that. So speaking of writing and books, can you guys both give us a recommendation on a book that you're reading or something you're just dying to recommend to our listeners? Melanie, how about you?
Sure. I love to read. I feel like I'm overwhelmed with books in my household, which is a good thing. But I will tell you, my husband won't get rid of a book to save his life. So every book that comes into my house does not leave my house. So, but that's another matter. The book I am currently reading is Never Finished by David Goggins. I don't know if you've read any of his other books.
No.
But they're a little intense. But when you hear just some of the struggles and trials and tribulations that this individual has gone through, I couldn't put it down. And it was very, very unique than other novels and fiction that I read. So I'm taking a little bit of a hiatus with his books, but I would highly recommend them.
Well, I'm kind of with your husband on like not getting rid of books. So like I have many categories. So I've got books that I absolutely love. And so I'm recommending them, but I buy them for somebody because I'm like, I can't give this baby up. You know, I have books that I like and I'm thinking, oh, I probably could learn something from this. Because if you like something and don't like something, you know, there's like great things to take from it to assure that, you know, maybe your writing, you know, reflects the good and not the things you don't like. And then books that I don't like, I also keep because I think, well, I don't want that out in the world with like someone having, you know, like I don't want to be the one sort of leaving that for somebody else. And so I like, yeah, I have a really, really hard time not getting rid of any of my books. And rarely is there a book that I really don't like that I've picked up. So I'm with him, but I appreciate this recommendation for our bookshelf. Amy, what about you? Do you have a book for us?
I love historical fiction. And so I just literally started reading the book Trust by Hernan Diaz. It's set in the 1920s in New York, and it's about the financial services industry and the rise of a Wall Street tycoon. So I find it interesting to, whether it's in a book or some of the shows I've seen about the financial industry and the embellishment. So I'm excited to read this and see what it's all about. I've heard various things about the way the book is structured and the perspective it's written in. So I'm excited to read about it, and I'll let you know what I think of it. But I love these kinds of books. So
wonderful. I love historical fiction too. I've got some of my favorite authors are historical. I write contemporary, but you know, I feel like there's just so much richness in sort of being able to put yourself in back, especially if they're pretty realistic to what had happened. I love that. So Never Finish and Trust. Thank you both so much. And thank you both for being on the show. The time just sort of flew by. I really enjoyed our conversation and your ability to be sort of transparent about what it takes to be a CCO. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Christine. It was great to spend time with you and Melanie.
Same here. Thank you so much, Christine, for the time we had together. Anytime.
Wonderful. Thank you. And thank you, our listeners, for spending your time with us. I hope this is not just information, but you let it be transformational in how you think about your career. I'm rooting for you. If you're an Apple user, I'd really appreciate it if you took a few seconds to leave a rating and a review. Your ratings and reviews tell Apple that this is a podcast worth listening to. And in turn, your reviews will help We Talk Careers get in front of more listeners looking to succeed, just like you. And while you're there, go ahead and hit that follow button, because there's going to be another brand new episode and you don't want to miss it. Until then, keep thriving. Thank you for listening.